Get him out of my sight.
Khaleesi, please. I just need a moment of your time. I brought you a gift.
It's true. He has.
Who are you?
I am the gift. It's a pleasure to meet you, Your Grace. My name is Tyrion Lannister.
See them get, there's this fight scene with fire and some guy really
Winter's
small
coming.
And helpless. The guy goes, the season's going on, and see him get bitten.
Watch your
head. Now they're doing amazing.
Is that a guy or a girl?
Like, seriously, we gotta see it.
What's his name again?
It's like a chicken.
What does Dracarys mean?
And,
lost his hair.
Feel cool.
Fucking red wedding.
Cannot give you back your homes or restore your dead to life, but perhaps I can give you justice in the name of our king.
Dracarys.
Welcome back to the Coffee Klatch Crew Game of Thrones episode review. I'm Jason Pistorino.
I'm Christina Lomangino.
Today we are reviewing episode 7, The Gift. It was a dark, dark episode, but we had a little gift.
That's a short joke.
And we had Cersei getting what she deserved.
Yes, the predominant feeling that I'm getting from viewers is that it was perhaps a dark episode in the sense that a lot of really intense plot developments occurred. However, people seem to feel like overall good is winning out against evil. I'm not sure that I completely agree, but I think that's something we should look at as we go through each region and kind of give our own feedback on.
I mean, there's some sections of that, but the North seems to be going, the pendulum seems to be swinging the other way right now.
Yeah, and I think that's what a lot of people that are frustrated with GOT right now are focused on, solely really what's happening in the North. But you mentioned that the gift seemed to refer to Tyrion being gifted from Jorah to Dany.
Yes.
What I thought was interesting was that there could have been multiple meanings for this title. Originally, when it came out, many people thought it referred to the region that's just south of the wall, which is actually named the Gift.
Oh.
And as a potential place where the men of the Night's Watch might have settled the wildlings that they were bringing south beyond the wall. Turns out that we didn't see that at all. I personally thought it was going to refer to the gift of mercy, or death, as they refer to it in the book, so we would see more of Arya at the House of Black and White, which we did not.
It still could be that. I have two other gifts. The gift of mercy and life would be the Sand Snake giving, what's his face, the...
Oh yeah, the antidote.
The antidote. But the gift for me was seeing that Sand Snake's boobies.
Is the most beautiful woman in the world.
They were sculpted beautifully.
They were pretty nice. Well, how about the gift that actually brought Jaime to Dorne in the first place? The sand that was given in that box. The snake, rather, that was given in that box. And Littlefinger's quote-unquote gifts to Cersei and Olenna, men to testify.
Yeah, so there was a lot of meanings. You're right.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
I dug it.
Why don't we start off with some response emails before we get into our episode?
That would be responsible of us.
Dork. Our first one comes from Leo. He says, forget the critics of the Sansa rape scene. It's like a bad political platform in every election where people just want to have something to bitch about. However, I believe there was a stabbing of a pregnant woman, I think at the Red Wedding, that graphically was a bit disturbing and might have warranted an X rating, so at least viewers could be forewarned before tuning in. Before I move on to what else he has to say, that's an interesting thought.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Of having a rating for things, but also I hear so much of this backlash and people, you know, I listen to actually two GOT review podcasts where they talked for a half an hour about that one scene alone, and then there was about a half an hour left for the entire rest of the episode. Now, It was definitely important, it was definitely disturbing, but I have to say that I agree, we did not hear nearly as much of a backlash. We had a very graphic scene where Talisa was stabbed in the stomach while pregnant, and we mentioned quite a few other things. Anyhow, Leo goes on to say, on to favorite characters. As a TV viewer, it's hard to accept that Arya has passed some relevant benchmark of transitioning into a faceless warrior. I have been rooting for her too long to settle for such a subdued victory. We need a bigger moment for Arya fans. Cersei has far outlived her usefulness, even as a villain, and needs to be dealt with sooner rather than later. So my favorite character for that episode would have to be, yet again, Tyrion, for saving the day. And he finishes by saying, again, another great podcast. Thank you both for making GOT so much more enjoyable for this viewer. I wish the rest of the GOT fans knew what they were missing out on.
Oh, thank you, Lee.
Thank you. I appreciate so that. Much. That's very kind.
And I agree with everything he said. So does he refer to having a rating per episode? Is that what he means?
I think he means a rating for the episodes that may have extremely disturbing graphic images.
Okay.
Such as the Red Wedding or this episode, so that viewers can be forewarned. And perhaps instead of being so frustrated later, might say, well, maybe I might choose to not watch this one. I can't see ever doing that as such a wholehearted GOT fan, but yeah, it's a thought.
It is a thought, yeah.
And just, I think, to draw attention to the fact that there have been other quite disturbing scenes that people didn't seem to be so disgusted with. And I've heard the reasoning 1,000 times over. We won't get into that whole debate again. but thank you for listening. Thank you for your words. And I see what you're saying about Arya. I think that the arc and the victories were more apparent in the books up until this point. But without saying too much, I think you'll still have your moments yet to come with her. Don't give up on that story.
Don't stop believing.
I'd like to give you a little clip from an interview with the actor that plays Lancel Lannister, Eugene Simon. HBO asks, is everyone underestimating the Sparrows and the Faith Militant? They've taken two queens now. He responds, they are. You are the one, we are the many. It's simply a question of numbers, but also, culturally, the Seven Kingdoms of Westeros are bound to this faith. So the Sparrows and the Faith Militant know they have the law on their side. Theirs is a deeply rooted ideology born out of necessity for change. Someone has got to look after the impoverished, which they do. They feed them, they clothe them, they house them. This is one of the reasons I have sympathy for Lancel and his cause. Although I don't agree with it, it's born out of disparity. What they get is coming to them.
Huh.
So the reason I chose to read this is he's kind of talking about the point that I've been saying up until now, that the Sparrows and the Faith Militant are sort of a wild card who seem to be picking up steam with their power. They've already taken two queens in, which we haven't seen anybody really able to accomplish such a thing so quickly, and the reason that he has so much support. See, that's one of the things I think they were missing out on the TV show, was showing you really how war-torn some of the regions of the Seven Kingdoms were. That throughout the war, people had burned crops, they had killed all the small folk, they couldn't get enough harvest in for winter, they were poor, starving, wandering around in the streets looking for protection from being killed, raped, beaten. Here comes this group saying, we're the only people that will help you, that will actually protect you and give you what you need. So they've amassed quite a crazy army. And yeah, that's a tide that could eventually turn because they haven't been paying attention. The crown, the people in power, they haven't been saying, look, this is what we need to do to help our people. We see that even with Lady Olenna when she goes to talk to the High Sparrow and he says, have you actually ever sown one of your fields? Have you reaped any of these crops that you keep threatening us with? I think that's maybe an important point. On to our synopsis for this episode. We will cover six locations. The Wall, Winterfell, The March, Marine, Dorne, and King's Landing. We got a stacked deck here today, Jason. Let's start out with The Wall, where Jon Snow prepares to leave for Hardhome with Tormund. Alistair Thorne reiterates his disapproval of Jon's rescue mission. Sam offers Jon a bag of dragonglass daggers. I thought probably the most significant moment from here was when Thorne very menacingly turned to Sam and said, you're losing all your friends, Tarly, or something to that effect.
That was during the funeral.
Oh, was that later on?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll get to that in a moment then. Here, a lot of people were saying, oh, just one dragonglass dagger, where's that going to get him? I think he was actually giving him a bag filled with them. And perhaps the intent is they will be somehow distributed to the men, either as arrows or spearheads, so that they can potentially fight off these White Walkers.
And we'll probably, we haven't seen any White Walkers this season yet. So that's probably, within the next couple episodes, that's probably when we will see them, when they're north of the wall.
Yeah.
And we'll get to see the Dragon Glass in its full display. I think that'll be cool.
Yeah, and we know that Stannis is saying he thinks he has more from his original house, too. Perhaps could arm people with more stuff. You know, maybe he'll send somebody to go fish out all the Dragon Glass from Dragonstone.
He's got his own problems right now.
Yes, many. All right, so a difference here from the books. In the novel, Jon acts a little more wisely by sending away Thorne, who he actually considered to be more dangerous than Slint. He sends him on a mission soon after he executes Slint, and he actually sends Cotter Pike to bring the wildlings from Hardhome instead of going himself. What I was saying about that little comment that we see later from Thorne, you know, you start to trust him a bit on the TV show because he's shown some courage, some goodness in the battle they had against the wildlings. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's an asshole at times, but perhaps a man he could depend on. In the books, Jon is a little more suspect of him and his character. So he sends this guy, Cotter Pike, to Hardhome to get the wildlings. After a bit of not hearing from him, he gets a letter that says, "At Hardhome, with 6 ships, wild seas, Blackbird lost with all hands, Talon taking water, very bad here, wildlings eating their own dead, dead things in the woods. Bravosi captain will only take women and children on ships, which women call us slavers. Attempt to take the Storm Crow defeated, 8 ravens left, dead things in the water. Send help by land, seas racked by storms." Then Jon thinks to himself, dead things in the woods, dead things in the water. 6 ship left of the 11 that set sail. Night falls, and now my war begins. So,
who sent that?
The man that he sent to go take the wildlings from Hardhome.
Oh, instead of him going.
He didn't actually go, because most of them were already at the wall. It was just these random women and children that he was rounding up from Hardhome.
Okay.
Unlike here, where it seems the majority of them probably are there. And, you know, this guy sends this very ominous letter that Jon gets, so.
Well, I think we're going to see some of that. But Jon's again, is going to have to be the, bear the force of it. That dude's got it rough.
Well, he's got Tormund with him now, though, and perhaps some good wildling fighters. I mean, they talk it up a bit more in the book how good of fighters these people are.
Yeah, but I don't think that they're going to be able to just show up and say, "Hey, so new plan. Your captain's dead, but listen, we had to do it. But join our
it
team.
It wasn't me. It was Stannis. Yeah.
Join our team. We agreed that it would be better off, and we'll give you some farmland. Remember that farmland you guys just destroyed? Well, you know.
You can have that.
It's all good. You can have it. And, you know, let's start all over. It's not going to be that easy.
I think he's going to have to put it to them the same way he did to Tormund. The only reason they'll possibly see is
it's a lot easier to talk one-on-one than to talk to a group.
Oh, sure. Sure, group mentality.
And I don't think they had microphones then.
Megaphones. Oh, yeah. Now we move on to Maester Aemon, who holds Baby Sam and remembers his younger brother. His mind is wandering a bit here. The brother's name was Aegon, or Egg Targaryen. "Get him south," Aemon warns Gilly, "before it's too late."
He's speaking regards to the son, right? The little kid?
Baby Sam.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's going back and forth between realizing it's Baby Sam and in his mind thinking it's his baby brother from childhood, Egg.
Right.
Which really, my problem with this is in the TV series, you don't really know anything about that. Egg means nothing to you. We were
in the TV series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were a little more understanding of his backstory and what he was talking about, and the ravings in the book were a lot more about Daenerys. And talking about her, and he has to get to her, and Sam, you gotta remember this information. He's giving him like bits and pieces of information here and there. The prince that was promised, and Storm and Sea, something. I don't know, he's just raving, but it seems like almost prophecy. I was surprised we didn't get any of that here, because this is the last time, obviously, we're going to hear from Eamon. Later that night, he's talking a little more nonsense, and then, unfortunately, he passes away.
Yep.
Departure of a big character in the book.
And that's when we get... you're losing all your friends, Tarly.
Yeah. Alistair. Well, first we get a nice eulogy from Sam.
Oh, yeah. Again.
Maester Eamon.
I keep thinking, Sam is definitely grown. He's doing a lot more than what he used to do. He used to just be a bumbling idiot.
Yeah.
But now he's giving sermons. He's reading books. He's taking care of a lot of things. And he's become more of a man. But now it feels like once that was said, I was like, oh, man. Here we go again in the north.
Well, yeah, because you thought perhaps things were turning around a bit. You thought perhaps Alistair was actually a good man who could be left to charge the wall. But I knew from the second that John talked about this plan in the room, and everybody, their faces just turned against him.
Yeah.
Like, we don't want this. The tide shifted, and I think probably Alistair shifted with them, and... perhaps Maester Eamon was the only voice of reason other than Sam at the wall. With him gone, I think this episode really shows how deep of shit Sam is going to be in here.
Yeah. I mean, they wasted no time showing us that.
Couple of interesting points. With the departure of Maester Eamon, this makes Daenerys the only known Targaryen left in the entire world. So that's a big thing. It's also the first natural death I believe we've seen in Game of Thrones. A man actually dying of natural causes, and in the book at 102 years old, no less. He was a repository of wisdom, sort of the moral compass of the Night's Watch. I mean, he had a chance to be king, which he turned down because he knew he wasn't suited, an unusual sacrifice in this world. And he was able to see the value of compromise, the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be sorely lacking that at the wall, I think. In the novels, Maester Eamon didn't die in Castle Black. Instead, Lord Commander had sent him away to a citadel in Old Town, fearing that Melisandre may want to sacrifice him for King's Blood, because she stayed behind when Stannis went to march on the Boltons.
Okay.
So they started putting this King's Blood together thing, too, and they were like, oh my god, he's not going to be safe here. We got to send him away. They were pissed at Jon for making that decision, so now even you had... you know, Sam and Eamon kind of... I mean, Eamon understood in the books. He got it. But he also kind of knew at his age, traveling would be death for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he remarked several times that he should have known. He should have stayed at the wall because ice preserves. So perhaps the only reason he was living so long was because of this cold climate in the north.
Oh, perhaps, yeah.
And the minute they took him south and started traveling, he just couldn't... he couldn't deal. He grew weaker and feverish during the journey. His mind started to wander.
All of our old go to Florida.
Yeah, it's a little different here. And, you know, people said perhaps he meant ice magic. Perhaps it was something more than just the cold there. And so anyhow, he finally dies aboard this boat called the Cinnamon Wind. In the show later, Sam finds two of his Night's Watch brothers harassing Gilly. He pulls out his sword, but he is no match for the men and is brutally beaten.
I have to say, though, again, we were seeing Sam, you know, you can see he was scared, but he would have never done it like this.
He tried to make a stand. It was pretty impressive, you know, where you think he's beaten and he gets back up and he's like, listen.
I mean, we see him get kicked in the face, kicked in the gut.
I thought they were going to kill him at one point where they started pounding on him over and over again. And it was just that close in shot of the beating he was taking.
He gets up. He says, I killed a White Walker. I killed a Fen. I'll take my chances with you. Now, these are the same cats.
Boy.
We know these two characters. I know them by face. I don't know them by name.
I don't.
Then
yeah,
again,
I don't
who do I know by name
here.
On this shit? But
were they involved in some skirmish before?
We've seen them in the north. These aren't new characters. That's all I mean.
Okay.
And I mean, just right away, again, a foreshadowing was all your friends are gone. So they go right away. To this woman, I don't know if it's because you're the only one here or if you actually are good looking, but it doesn't matter to us.
Yeah.
And they're gonna rape her.
Yep.
And then
god, people would have freaked if there was another rape scene, huh?
Yeah, I guess so.
But yeah, I mean, just like you say, this immediate, Sam, you're gonna be in shit, your people are gone. And 2 seconds later, Magister Aemon dies. And then right after that, the only thing that he cares about left, Gilly, is attacked. And he knows that Little Sam is in trouble. Magister Aemon was telling him, get him away. So I really think, yeah, he would have stood his ground. He would have died. Mm-hmm. You know, he would have died defending her honor, which would have been a real shame because she still would have been shit out of luck. However, Wolf Watch! I'm so happy. Finally, I knew they would come. I knew this would pay off eventually. I was actually looking at older seasons and going through how many appearances Ghost has made throughout the seasons. And in the beginning, it was like 4, 5, then it waned down to 2, and we'd only had 1 so far this season. So I knew it was coming, and out of the darkness comes Ghost to save the day.
Now, why do they do this? They'll show us a dragon for 20-second clip, then we won't see them forever.
Yep.
This was like a 10-second clip of Ghost, and that's the only one we've seen. They tease us with that, but I guess it also keeps it like less of a fantasy if you only see them for a little bit. I don't know.
Perhaps.
Cheaper.
Although I think the direwolves are a little less of a fantasy creature, perhaps, than the dragons. I mean, you see that they do have some sort of power to them, especially to those they are loyal to. Now, in the TV show, I think that's being played up even more, that the loyalty is not just to Jon, it's to those he loves, and Ghost somehow knows that. We've gotten scenes like at Craster's Keep where he comes in and saves the day, mm-hmm. scenes like here where Jon wasn't even there and
but
he
do you
protected
think,
Sam.
Do you think Jon said, protect Sam? Do you think he told Ghost that?
Yeah, I was going to bring up that point in the book too, was that when they were traveling south and Jon was still with the Wildlings, they were about to scale the wall, and he knew Ghost couldn't come with him for that. So he said to Ghost, meet me back at Castle Black. And in his mind, he thought, I hope he knows what that means. I hope he'll do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then everything else happens. He scales the wall. Finally, he gets back to Castle Black, and there Ghost is. So he understood what Jon said. And there has been this kind of warging connection ability mm-hmm. between the Starks and their wolves. So, yeah, I think he
probably told him.
And even if he didn't tell him, he senses this is somebody important to Jon.
And we know that Ghost is there. I mean, he must have been watching and listening in to have been there at such an opportune time to protect him. So he's watching. He's listening.
Yeah, remember back in the day, Ghost knew there was a white, mm-hmm. a reanimated corpse in the Lord Commander's chambers before anybody else did. He seems to be a bit of a protector symbol, which I'm happy. If we have nothing else here at Castle Black, we have Ghost. However, that seems to indicate that Jon is not taking him with him on his mission to Hardhome. And he's really going to need all the help he can get, too. I'm a little worried that the last time we saw somebody say, I'm not going to take my direwolf with me on an important mission, is where Rob decided not to take him into the wedding at the Freys, and it came back to bite him in the ass.
Yeah.
That he didn't have his wolf with him.
I hope not.
But we'll see. Then on to a bit of a happier scene. Gilly nurses Sam's wounds and demands that next time Sam not risk his life on her behalf. He refuses, promises to take care of both her and baby Sam no matter what, and then Sam becomes a man.
That was funny.
It's such a Sam way. What does he say? Oh my?
Something like that.
Oh
yeah.
My. yeah, kind of. All right. So a cute scene. We get a little bonus here for Sam. However, I'm a little worried. So we talked about Sam having no protection left. This is the first time we see Sam overestimate himself in defending Gilly, unlike previously where he underestimates himself. I'm such a coward. I can't do this.
Well, and I mean, what other choice did he have?
Well, yeah, but he's changing. That's the point. But now also he's broken his vows. And he knows that Gilly and baby Sam are in trouble. So what is it going to take? How long is Sam going to stay? Or is he just going to say, I need to take care of these people I love and bounce on Castle Black? Do you think he ever would?
I don't know. Where would he go?
I don't know.
I think I'll stay for now. I don't have an answer for that.
So, viewers, what do you think? Will Sam stay till the very end? How will this affect him? Or will he leave to protect Gilly and baby Sam? Or perhaps will he just send the two of them away somewhere he thinks safe and stay there? Our second location is Winterfell. Get ready, folks. Theon brings a tray to Sansa, who's locked in her bedchamber. She is clearly disheveled. We see bruises on her arms, evidence she's being locked in there and beaten. She begs Theon to help her, but he is impassive. He keeps protesting, I'm Reek. She really has to break him out, in a sense. You don't think he's going to. Finally, she gives him the candle that was given to her by the old servant woman and asks him to light it in the highest window of the broken tower to signal a rescue.
Well, she screams to him, grabbing him. Your name is Theon Greyjoy, last surviving son of Balon Greyjoy, Lord of the Iron Islands. Do you hear me? Again, We're slowly pulling him out from this Reek hell. And again, just to reiterate for the third episode, I apologize, but Theon's going to have something to do with this next fight that they have.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, too. You mentioned the name being so important to his sense of identity. We've seen that where he needs to pretend to be Theon when he takes Moat Cailin, and that sort of snaps him a little. Then we see him have to say he's Theon Greyjoy at the wedding.
Yeah.
Each time he has to say his real name or he hears somebody else say it with weight behind it, it seems to trigger something in his brain. And in the books, a big part of the brainwashing was the beating down. And you would see him every chapter to the point he starts repeating it to himself with this weird rhyme. Reek, reek, it rhymes with weak. Mm-hmm. Reek, 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 it rhymes with sneak. My name is Reek. And it really is the thing that keeps him broken and submissive. So now we're seeing the opposite of that.
That's how he was broken down.
Almost giving it power to reanimate him.
Absolutely. And before he was taken, he was on this mission to rejoin the Greyjoy family and to prove that he was a Greyjoy. So
that's why he took
there's
Winterfell.
There's a lot of meaning besides his name. Yeah.
Yeah, son of Balon, because he wants to prove to his father that he's worthy.
He's a Greyjoy.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of meaning to him with this name.
A lot of problems with being a Greyjoy too, though. I would rather he was associating more with the Starks, who he grew up with, because if you get more backstory into the Greyjoys, their whole thing is we do not sow. And that means we don't plant our crops. We don't sow our harvest. We don't work for our living. We steal, we rape, we plunder, we take what's ours. Mm-hmm. And that's how he got the idea that he had to take Winterfell to prove himself.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a double-edged sword there, too. But let's go on to this next scene. I really have to put people to the question, because I interpreted this so differently, apparently, than what everyone else did. Theon accepts the candle. He agrees to light it. Then he goes up to a tower. We don't know what tower it is. We get a vision. We get a view of the broken tower. But then we just see him walk into a room. And Ramsay's sitting there behind a table. The food is laid out. Apparently, this is a tower he's living in or eating in. Which the first thing in my mind is, that wouldn't be in the broken tower, right? He wouldn't just be chilling. Nobody goes in the broken tower. It's abandoned.
Well, he must have known.
So either he knew, right? This is my point. Either he knew and he was sitting up there waiting for Reek to come. Mm-hmm. Or else Reek, this is everyone else's opinion, that Reek never went to the Broken Tower. He went instead right to the other tower where Ramsay's been living to snitch. So it wasn't that he got caught out trying to do what was right. He'd made the decision to turn on her and go directly to Ramsay and snitch.
I thought that at first, but then Ramsay had that woman that went to Sansa last episode saying, you know, we're here to help. And he had her caught. He killed her.
Not until after that, though. So they're saying he went right to Ramsay, snitched on Sansa's plan, and told her about the servant. Told him about the servant. So that really he wasn't Theon even for a moment. He immediately went back into Reek, went to his master and said, Sansa's planning an escape and the old woman's helping her. And that's how Ramsay knew.
Huh.
So, yeah, that was everybody else's view. I didn't see it that way. I thought perhaps he had gone to try and got caught out because Ramsay was already two steps ahead of him. I guess that's really open to interpretation. The only flaw that people are pointing out in my idea is that the Broken Tower is abandoned, and there's no way that that's where Ramsay was sitting with this stuff all laid out before him. I guess we'll see about that. Either way, he did wind up having to divulge to Ramsay. The question is, did he start out trying to do the right thing or not? And after he tells Ramsay about this, Ramsay goes on his rampage. He requests that Sansa join him out on the battlements, where he explains that the emerging snowstorm is actually a lucky occurrence, as it will cripple Stannis' approaching army. He says they don't know how to fight in the cold. And it will secure Ramsay's future place as Warden of the North. At this point, Sansa points out that Roose's true-born son will have a stronger claim than Ramsay. Ramsay kind of brushes that off and says, you know, bastards can rise high in the world, and mentions that Jon Snow is now Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. He does this in order to throw Sansa off because he doesn't like what she's telling him. He doesn't like that there might be truth to this. And then he proceeds to show her the body of the fleet servant woman. But I don't understand, what is Sansa playing at? I mean, we're not actually seeing this character arc of her getting stronger. We're kind of seeing her poke the beehive and say dumb shit for no apparent reason that's just going to piss him off. Where did she think she was going with that?
Yeah, I remember you having a comment while watching. I don't know why the lip.
It's not even coy.
She's got nothing to lose at this point, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, well, I guess so, because it's not even coy the way it was with Joffrey, where she was concealing her snarkiness under a layer of, much like Catelyn used to teach her, a layer of nicety, so she can't be immediately called out on what she's saying. She's sort of dropped all that, and she's just rebuffing, you know, fighting back, but with these words that are just going to make him pissed. I mean, we do see her grab that weapon, whatever it is. It looked like a corkscrew.
A nail or something, I think she feels like it can't get worse for her. He can't kill her.
Right.
And Littlefinger's coming back. And I've been dealt with enough. I've met enough of you assholes, so fuck
it's
you.
The only way I can get back.
Yep. And next time he tries to rape her, maybe she's going to cork him in the balls.
I would love this scene to happen with her and Theon kind of ganging up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want me to watch? Watch this motherfucker. Yeah. You know? Well, yeah, altogether, not a happy location as far as evil winning out over good, although I think their days could be numbered. I had a lot of hope for that right up until this scene where we move on to the march and we see Davos and Stannis. Davos is giving his report, telling Stannis that basically things are dire. Horses are dying, men are deserting, they've lost 500 men from the Sellsword Company. Which Stannis is not surprised in. He says they have no loyalty but to gold. However, it's not a good sign. Men are going to get cold. They have no food.
Yeah. But what he had to say, we march to victory or we march to defeat, but we go forward only forward. And when he explains why, if we go back now, we'll be stuck there forever because winter is coming. It's only going to get worse from here. It's not like we have a month of this and then it's going to get warm again.
Right.
I understand where he's coming from.
Years of that.
Yeah. Now is the time to strike. If they go back north, they can't feed all those guys, so they're going to die slowly, and he'll be left with a skeleton crew, if they're even alive when the walkers come.
Right, but if they don't have enough men when they fight the Boltons, they're done. And then they got no army to march south anyhow.
Yes, but 500 seems like a lot, but he's got a huge army right now. It's big. It's a big army.
Yes, but the thing they are not describing properly is they will need a big army. They talked often in the books how they needed very few men to stand guard at Winterfell because Winterfell protects itself.
Right.
And you'll break 100 men on their walls and defenses for every one man you need defending behind. Mm-hmm. So luckily the Boltons aren't going to need much. This is where Jon could have really come in handy to tell him about Winterfell, how you get in there, how do you attack them right. I mean,
Yeah.
I would have liked for him to give him some of that information before he left. But, yeah, I still have faith in Stannis. I do, despite...
And they're not used to fighting in the cold.
Right.
But the other cats are. What's the other family?
The Boltons.
The Boltons are. These cats are used to fighting in the... Yeah, but you know what?
They need some Northmen to come and rally. Some North people who are like, we fucking hate the Boltons, too. Let's get down with this and help you take the castle. But he tried, and nobody really came to his aid yet. So anyhow, Davos is urging him to return to Castle Black, replenish their resources, wait for the right time. Stannis won't hear of it. And then Melisandre comes in. Mm-hmm. Just to give him a little more shit, like Stannis. I mean, Stannis really believes in his convictions, right? He's got two advisors. He's got people he trusts in, all telling him basically he's not doing the right thing.
Yes.
From day one, I am the rightful king. I really want to help the realm. This is what the fuck we're doing, and I believe in it. Which is kind of inspiring, even when you're in such a bad situation, that this man thinks so strongly of this plan.
He really likes Stannis.
I think he's a great man. I'm worried that visually, when we saw him this time, mm-hmm. he looks like he's getting broken down. His eyes are sunken. He's skinnier. And at first glance, I thought, it's the march. It's the not eating. It's the cold, the not sleeping. But... when Melisandre came in, she is still looking fresh as a fucking summer day, right? Mm-hmm. She doesn't look cold. She doesn't look like she's starving. There is some magic going on with her that she already said she can't get cold. So is she kind of working her magic on Stannis too?
Oh, breaking him down?
Yeah.
Maybe. She's
because
got that puss match.
I think she's starting to think maybe Stannis isn't the one that she thought.
Oh, I think that too.
Maybe it's Jon.
She's been looking, yeah. I believe that as well. But when she brings that... I'll let you tell it.
So she tells Stannis to trust in the Lord of Light, that she's seen the Boltons defeated in her flames, and he really wants specifics on this. You know, what did you see? What did you know for sure? Because I'm having trouble believing now. She's absolutely sure, but she tells him that sometimes sacrifices are required for victory, and this one's going to require a big sacrifice. So if he wants to win, she needs Shireen.
Now, when we first, not when we first met him, but when we got to really know him,
mm-hmm.
he was doing these sacrifices, quote unquote,
yep.
And we started to hate him because he had to do really fucked up things. And you were saying... we're starting to see a good Baratheon.
Yeah.
And we were like, and I said, either he dies and
yeah.
something's not. So now we're tested again. And it seems like at this point, he's not going to do it to his own daughter. And if he does do this, that will negate all the good that he's done this episode or this season. Well, not that he's done good,
yeah,
but the positive things.
You know, you could kind of justify what you said before when he was doing this stuff to Gendry. He was just using the leeches to mm-hmm. take his blood.
Yeah.
And I don't understand. Like, the blood of that killed three kings.
So put a leech on the chick.
But she wanted to kill Gendry in the end, too. It was just that Davos sent him away before she was able to do that. Sent him out on a rowboat, which, by the way, we haven't seen him since then. He's still, like, out rowing on the fucking narrow sea there.
And wait, first, I'm sorry. Speaking of haven't seen, and I've been thinking about this every episode. We haven't seen that group that, what's-her-name was with?
The Brotherhood Without Banners?
Where the guy keeps dying, but...
Yeah.
Where are they?
And he's for the Lord of Light, too.
Yeah. Where the fuck are they?
Well, I think we'll get to that later. There's a bunch of people wandering around in Westeros that we believe could be important that we haven't seen in a while. Mm-hmm. Gendry should be one of them. But, yeah, so we see here that ultimately she settled for the leeches. What she wanted was to burn him. She said that's really the way you get the most leverage, the most power. And she feels this situation is so dire that it calls for a burning.
Just give her leeches. I don't understand.
Yeah, I would tell him, listen, we're going to leech her or you're going to get burned.
Do it the Bolton way, you know?
Oh, my goodness. How did you find this? No, the Bolton way would be flaying them. Fuck that.
You got to believe it.
We don't want her flayed.
How am I supposed to live without you? This is what he's going to sing to his daughter.
Yeah, he stands up for her for now. He tells Melisandre to basically get the fuck out of his tent. But he looks weak. I'm nervous if his convictions will remain. And you know, hopefully we know we'll have Davos at least on his side for this one. Because it doesn't seem like the mom cares. Elise will be like, yeah, you need Shireen? Burn Shireen. I don't like her anyway.
Yep. And we've seen the foreshadowing of that.
But Davos would never, ever let that happen.
No. Now I got that song in my head.
Now we're going to go across the sea to Meereen. Here we see Daario and Dany in bed discussing her impending marriage to Hisdar. Daario insists that Dany has a choice in the matter. And, you know, she should just marry him instead. Dany rejects that proposal.
Well, he's definitely jealous.
Yeah.
You are a queen. You can do what you like. No, I can't.
You're the only person in Meereen who's not free.
Yep. I thought that was very deep. And that's probably in her head. You know, if anyone can get in her head, that dude can.
Yeah.
He's definitely jealous. He loves her. He wants her to kill. If I were you, I'd take all the highborns. Highborns?
The masters. Yeah, you're either the butcher or the meat. Butcher them. Kill them all.
Kill them all. Kill them.
Well, all right. So in the books, the agreement to marry Hisdar, I thought, was a bit better. Because she tells him, peace is my desire. You say you can help me. You can help end the nightly slaughter in my streets. I say do it. Put an end to this shadow war, and I will know you're worthy of a throne. 90 days and 90 nights without a corpse, and on the 91st day, we wed.
She says that to whom?
Hisdar.
Oh.
So she it's still a political marriage, but she's not saying, oh, maybe on the off chance that people will respect me if I marry into culture. She wants the killing.
It's a smarter
end.
Move.
So at
Less
that point.
Emotional move.
Yeah, they're still killing people in the streets, like where we saw Barristan die.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, 90 days with no more killings, and I'll know you mean you want peace the same as me.
Yeah.
But it still backfires because, yeah, there's no killings for 90 days. But then Daario in the book says he thinks the peace is because Hisdar is actually the head of the Sons of the Harpy. And he just told them to quit it for 90 days.
Oh, okay.
But it just makes her seem a little smarter.
I just kept thinking in this scene that this was a perfect opportunity to see her boobs again. And I'm constantly reminded that
we haven't
she made
seen
a deal
for a while, right?
Well, she made a deal now. That she's not going to be naked again.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Why did she do that?
Because she's becoming more famous. She's in the new Star Wars. Or no, new Terminator.
See, but everyone gets naked in Game of Thrones.
I think she's had enough.
It's like a thing.
I don't know.
She's boobies everywhere.
Maybe there's someone else jealous in her life.
Oh, yeah. Then we move on to the location that I thought was coolest. Jorah is sold at a slave auction to a master named Yezzan. Tyrion orchestrates his purchase as well, beating a man with his chain to convince Yezzan of his worth. He advises his new master that they must fight in the Meereen fighting pits as free men. And in response, he throws a single coin at Tyrion and says, here's the wages for the rest of your life. Now, Yezzan, Zokezak, I think. Zokegas. He's not a Meereenese great master, but a Yunkish wise master and a completely different looking man in the book. So he's got yellow eyes. He's morbidly obese to the point that he can no longer stand. He has to be carried all over the place in this litter. He contracted a jungle disease while on a slaving raid in Sothorius, which he's been suffering from for years. He can't hold his water, so he always smells of urine. So he's got tons of perfume on, which can't hide it. And he wears yellow silk tokars to hide the urinating.
I'm a what now? Hey. I'm a Rastafarian Targaryen. I got some dragons and they are very scary. And
sorry.
Should have been put in before.
Yeah,
it's really not appropriate to what we're talking about here in this big fat guy.
It took me that long to Google it.
Anyhow, he's obsessed with the grotesque in the book. So he purchases slaves with physical deformities to add to his collection, his special treasures, he calls them. And that's why he really wants Tyrion in the book. In the book, he's with this other dwarf girl, and they're performing this basically circus act. She's one of the people that had performed at Joffrey's wedding. One of the jousters, her and her brother.
Okay.
So she convinces Tyrion, you got to keep them happy. That's the only way to get them to not kill you is to entertain them, make them laugh at you, and then you'll live. And so she kind of tries to teach him this jousting routine that they put on to make people laugh and get a little money. And in the books, that's how he gets himself sold. And then they're not going to take Jorah, so he says, well, wait, he's part of our act. We can't do it without him. We do the bear and the maiden fair. And that's how he wiggles his way into that. But Yezin, yeah, definitely a bit different in the books. Yezin's slaves, including Tyrion and Jorah in the show, are led to a lesser fighting pit and confined to a holding room. Encouraged by Hisdar, Dany takes a seat in the stand to honor the fighters with her presence. We see that after a few moments, she looks like she's going to leave because she's just disgusted with the way this whole fighting pit thing is going.
It's not her game.
It's too violent. It's too much bloodshed. Here we see Jorah realizing that Dany's there, and he looks out, and he knows her so well before she even stands up, he can tell. He can tell she's about had it, and he's going to lose his chance if she leaves.
Yes.
So he puts on a helmet to disguise his identity, breaks out of the holding area, and starts attacking the other fighters.
Kicks everyone's ass.
Yes, using non-lethal and quick methods. Mm-hmm. So you can see her face start to light up. Who is this great man who can defeat everyone without killing them? And you can only imagine his heart swelling at that look, right? I've done it. I've gotten back in her good graces right up until he takes off the helmet.
Yep.
Bam. Right back to get this man out of my face.
And that's how this podcast opens up, yeah.
So it looks like it's all going to turn south. And he says, wait. I brought you a gift. And here comes Tyrion rushing out, managed to get out of that cell.
Oh, how about the jail slaver?
Yeah,
letting him loose. That's pretty cool.
Didn't he remind you? I heard somebody else say, and I agree, of Mordor, the guy, not Hodor, Mordor, the guy when he was in the sky cells in the Eyrie, and he kept trying to bribe the guy to let him out with gold. He was like kind of the big dumb guy.
Oh yeah, like, yeah.
You get back. Little man, get back. And he kept like hitting him with stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like another one of these
guys.
But
it wasn't him, right?
So, no, but he just, this is how he does it. You know, he talks his way out or he charms his way out.
He didn't even need to do either of that, though.
Yeah, this guy just like helps him out and he rushes out there and he says, you know, I'm the gift. And then doesn't even have to say anything, just says, I'm Tyrion Lannister. And you're like, Tyrion fucking Lannister, man. And
this changes the game.
They end on her face and it's unreadable.
Yeah.
It's unreadable whether she's going to want to kill him, keep him for counsel, kick both of them out. You just don't know.
Well, he'll talk his way into it, regardless if she wants to kill him right now.
I can't wait to hear what he has
to
say.
If he dies right now, I'm going to stop watching Game
of Thrones. He's going to have to talk double time on this one.
I think he's ready. It looked like he was ready. He had a plan.
He's always got a plan.
Where the fuck is Varys?
No, don't. Wait, we're not there yet. We're going to go to Mystery People at the end. We've got two more locations. Next, we go to Dorne, where Jaime speaks with Myrcella privately and tells her she must return to King's Landing. She refuses. She says she'll stay in Dorne, her real home, and marry Trystane Martell. I thought this was interesting. She said, listen, I didn't want to come here in the first place. All right, you guys made me come here, but now I'm happy. Like, I'm away from the fighting. It's gorgeous here. I'm married to a gorgeous man or engaged to a gorgeous man. She's kind of like, what the fuck are you doing here, Jaime? I don't care. And by the way, can't help but remarking that he's short of hand. Which was an interesting response.
Yeah, that was funny.
And you could see he doesn't really know what to say to this. He's like, well, but it's the plan. But you like, you got to come back because you're not safe here. And you could tell he's just not winning her over on this one. We switch scenes to Bronn and the Sand Snake sitting in adjacent cells. Okay. This was the scene I had the most problem with out of everything in the episode.
Loved it.
There were elements that are good. So, through the bars, Tyene flirts with Bronn, who you could see he's got a slight gash from one of her daggers. I think the intent was that she, A, had to get him to stand up, and B, get his blood pumping.
Yes.
In order to move the poison throughout his bloodstream.
But then again, he was singing, and your blood's pumping.
But he, and this has been a while later, he had clearly had to move to get to the cells. But then I guess he was laying down, and it just wasn't circulating. I don't know. It was very weird why this needed to happen.
Well, it was a smaller gash. It wasn't a stab.
Right.
His adrenaline is pumping, maybe. And we don't know how long it's been. Maybe they were just sat in there and he's singing. You know, maybe, you know, for us, it's been a whole week. But for them, maybe they were just put in there. Also, I want to state, again, he gets to sing.
Yes.
And what we've learned is...
Yeah, since then, we learned every other podcast has said it already now. We were a little behind the times here, but that actually, Braun is a fairly famous singer. I forget now his name in real life, the actor that plays this role. But he was in a sort of famous pop band, a boy band, actually, back in the day. We listened to some of the YouTube videos. He actually has a really good voice, so no surprise they wanted him to sing again. And
he was a little idol. I mean, not a little. He was like...
It's all clean in cut and yeah. Like preppy clothing. It's so not Braun-like. It makes me laugh. Up on the roof. Up on the roof. When this old world starts getting me down and people are just too much for me to bear. Up on the roof. I climb way the top of the stairs, and all my cares just drift right into space. On the roof is peaceful as can be, and there the world below can't bother me. Let me tell you now. And we mentioned on the last podcast, such a fitting song, too, for him to be singing The Dornishman's Wife. So he gets into this exchange with Tyene over being the most beautiful woman in the world. It just felt like an excuse to show his aunt snake naked.
I didn't mind it.
If there was a reason behind it, like, you could tell she maybe sort of had a plan because she looks at her sisters first and, all right, they each maybe have a role to play. So if it comes to somebody needs to flirt and be sexual and get a man over that way, then it's Tyene, right? Like it appeared they were all like, all right, Tyene's up now. Basically, she's gonna do the deed here.
But she saves him.
But right. So if that was the whole point, was to get this poison acting and to kill him, then she turns around and throws him the antidote. And I'm thinking, fuck no. Some poison bitch that just
poison bitch
got you with her sword. You're just going to take something she throws you and assume it's a cure? I mean, I guess he didn't have
he had no choice
at that point because he was dying. But when it turned out that it seemed it really was an antidote, then I thought, well, what was the point of this whole scene then?
Titties.
Right. For the sake of that. And to
me... Well, no, the poison, and there's going to be more to this. Maybe they're going to have him on the... maybe they got his respect. They respect him now because the way he fought, maybe?
Yeah, she seems...
They need him to get out of the jail.
It seems she genuinely maybe did like him a little bit.
And where is their mother?
Alaria.
Wouldn't she be in jail with them?
You would think. But right? Yeah, I just don't like that from the beginning. They felt a bit characterish. They felt not really the sand snakes we saw in the book. And... I thought this could be a moment where we would see more, and it just, to me, kept me going of that opinion that they're not handling them right.
Yeah.
Let's just have them get naked now. We don't know what else to do with them.
Well, her two sisters were rolling their eyes, so they obviously were not in on it. They didn't like what she was doing.
Oh, I thought they were just like I said before, this is her role. When they need somebody to seduce, this is what Tyene does.
Oh, okay.
So, like, just... Well, yeah, there goes Tyene again. You know, she'll get him. Don't worry. Either way, we find out definitively that her dagger was coated with a deadly poison called the Long Farewell, which take time to work. But contact with a single drop is fatal. A lot with poisons, a lot with antidotes being in necklaces and other jewelry, we're learning. it's the first time an antidote is mentioned and used successfully in the show. In the novels, there is no mention of any antidote or effective treatment to any of the known poisons. Mm. So that's a deviation. And now we'll go to our last location, King's Landing. Lady Olenna approaches a man scrubbing the Sept, who she fails to recognize as the High Sparrow himself. She asks for the return of her grandchildren. She offers to make the holy man the richest septon who ever lived. She's looking for any way to get them out of there. The High Sparrow reminds the Queen of Thorns that her grandchildren both lied under oath. The gods demand justice, he tells her. She threatens to stop sending the Tyrell crops to the capital, but he's not intimidated. Again, he says, you are the few, we are the many. We got you, pretty much.
If we decided to turn on you, we could overwhelm you.
Yeah, your crops don't mean shit at the end of the day.
Because we make your crops. You don't know how to...
We're the people that reap the harvest. Yeah, I mean, you might be able to threaten somebody like Cersei with that, but we know better.
Mm.
So she really was sort of outmatched there for the first time that we've seen Lady Olenna.
Yeah, and I feel like that actor could be a good Doctor Who. I don't know. I just look at him like, that could be a Doctor Who.
He's good. He's a very strong actor. Now we see Littlefinger meet with Lady Olenna in his destroyed brothel. They talk about having murdered King Joffrey together.
That's the first time we hear Lady Olenna admit it. I mean, not that she had to admit it to him. He knew, but say it out loud to us.
Yeah, that they're conspirators. Their fates are joined, and they is what it. They say.
He keeps his cool because she was kind of threatening him.
Yeah, well, she thinks that he is a schemer, and eventually he's just going to turn around and stab her in the back. She's got him pegged.
He is a schemer.
She knows what he is, and she had to kind of get in bed with him, quote unquote, to get this thing done of having Joffrey murdered, but she doesn't like it, and she knows his allegiance is only to himself.
But
he admits he came back to King's Landing because Cersei summoned him, but that he's not forgotten their alliance, and he offers her the same gift that he gave to Cersei.
I love that. That was a great scene.
Brilliant. So you know that he's behind Olivar, which I thought, given the brothel thing, he had to be. I was of that mind anyway last week. However, who is he giving to Lady Olenna? Because it can't be Lancel. Lancel already confessed when he first joined the High Sparrows of these sins. So it wouldn't be giving him that gift. He already did that of his. It's not like Littlefinger has this man in his pocket. He did that of his own accord. He's got nothing to do really with Littlefinger. Littlefinger must have someone else.
Oh, so that wasn't it?
I don't think so.
Oh, shit.
I think he's got something else planned, because I think what you're going to find out, this is just my theory, that Lancel confessed to sleeping with her, which, yeah, is bad, but that's not going to be a major punishment. He's going to maybe say something about being involved with King Robert's death, but that's not going to be provable. I think the nail in the coffin is that Littlefinger must have somebody who's going to testify that her children are bastards, a product of incest.
Oh.
And that's where she's going to get
fucked. So that's when we're going to see, which is funny, because last season we had to see a trial with Tyrion.
Yes.
And now we're going to see a trial with Cersei.
Yes, and maybe Margaery and Loras. We don't know. It seems they're all going to be tried. And very differently, probably, than what we saw last time.
Yeah.
Because it's by the High Sparrow. I don't know what their trial rules are.
I love the way they did it. They had Cersei go to Margaery first, and once again just show to us again look how much of a bitch she is. And Margaery had that great, like, lies come easily to you. Everyone knows that, but innocence, decency, and concern, you're not very good at those, I'm afraid. It was just, again, to remind us, hey, Cersei's been a bitch this whole season.
And she actually, in the books, calls her a bitch and starts raving at her, Margaery, in the books. She's like, you spiteful, evil bitch!
But then she gets... And you were... I wasn't afraid of this. I thought Cersei knew what she was doing when she went first to talk to the High Sparrow. And I think you had a feeling it would come back on her when the High Sparrow wanted to. Essentially, the High Sparrow...
Well, because the High Sparrow has been hiding it from the very beginning. He's been saying, I am here to do justice, and you can't hide behind finery, and you can't hide behind titles or gold or wealth. You even said from the first when she was talking to him, is she talking about herself? Is she confessing her own crimes? Like,
yeah, that's right.
You, only an idiot would be blind to this man doesn't care. And if he's on the warpath, eventually he's going to get to you because you got more sins than anyone.
I just thought what was protecting her was that he needed her to stay in power, but apparently not. I mean, what we...
But well, what will we find when we strip away your finery?
Maybe he does. Maybe he just wants to punish her, but he doesn't want to remove her from the throne. So in that sense, then maybe we won't hear about the children being bastards. Maybe she'll just be punished for her other sins.
Hey, listen. They put her in jail by this other woman, new character. Is she in the books?
Yes. There's actually, I think, two or three septas. So the people that work at the sept, the men are septons, the ladies are septas.
Why does she have a dress when the men have, like, these rags?
Well, these are the sparrows. Okay, so they're like a branch of the religion. Before they came in, we had the great sept of Baelor, where we saw the guy was dressed, like, all elaborately. And then the septas
were... The one that got arrested.
Right. The septas were robed from head to heel. So I think she's one of the septas originally from there.
Okay.
This group that came in is like a fanatic group of sparrows.
Okay.
They're the ones that don't believe in any of the... No shoes, no nothing. But yeah, but so before that, we see the scene where Cersei's comforting Tommen. And she counsels him to be strong and offers to speak to the High Sparrow on his behalf, which I thought was just going to be another kind of keep Tommen happy. But she actually does go to the Sparrow, and he explains there will be a trial for the Tyrell siblings. High and low alike, true hearts will be laid bare. So, yeah, then with that, we see Lancel come in, and then you know it's on.
Yeah,
then
and
you know
I love
it's
the
bad
way...
news.
The actress who played Cersei, she actually did really well because without saying words, you can see the panic in her face slowly grow as he's talking and her slowly looking around like, uh-oh. I thought that was a great...
She's just so arrogant, she didn't even realize till that moment what kind of situation she was putting herself into, which I knew was going to be her downfall. Underestimating people, only focusing on... Somebody said it perfectly in another podcast. They said she's like a bad chess player. Who's always thinking about her next moves in advance, but never her opponent's moves.
Oh, I see.
And that's
like that.
How she gets trapped out.
But the actress did it so well, that scene.
Oh, yeah.
It's great.
She's great.
But I felt some happiness. I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, well, we wanted this to happen.
Yeah.
From day one, right? Punish Cersei. She's the most horrible, evil person. I mean, they even made her a little more sympathetic in the TV series. But even then, I still...
But is this going to be the final kick to make our girl of a king finally say, that's it. All right, I got the army. They got my mom, my wife,
imagine he's going to just sit there
brother.
Now. Yeah.
This is it.
I can't imagine.
So maybe there is no trial. She gets off again because he finally grows some balls and like goes in there and just says, you know what? You guys have sticks.
But there is a lot of them. And when they were showing... His Kingsguard, it didn't look like that many. When they were showing the sparrows come into the city at first and then showing his Kingsguard, it didn't look... I mean, so the Kingsguard's only 7 to begin with and then they have the additional army or whatever. But I think it's not that many in King's Landing. I mean, now the Lannisters also have an army that could be called in, but you got to think the only person left to call them in right now would be Kevin. Their uncle Kevin, who stormed back off to Castle Rock, he doesn't want to help Cersei for beans. I can't imagine he would come in, but
it's King's
if
Landing,
he finds out Tommen might be in trouble, or King's Landing as a whole might be in trouble, or now Lancel's involved, his son, in the trial.
Oh, right, yeah.
So maybe that will bring him there. Okay, so just a slight twist here in the book. Rather than having Lancel reveal her sins, it's a man named Osney Kettleblack, who she thought was this new pawn when she started getting rid of all the people on the council and around her. She brought in these 3 men who were Kettleblacks, and she was kind of manipulating them, and she had one of them go to the High Septon and claim to have an affair with Margaery and say that she wasn't pure anymore, but then that backfired because they took in Osney and tortured him until he told the truth about Cersei herself. Basically, the same idea.
I still think that Littlefinger had something because the timeliness of what conspired.
Oh, he did. But
too good.
I think there's another chip other than Lancel that
he's got,
I think. That's just...
Okay.
That's our synopsis for the locations. let's talk a couple of things.
Well, what does it mean, the way it ended? Look at my face. It's the last thing you'll see before you die. Cersei says that to that chick, the new actress.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I think she's just spitting venom. I think she's just pissed, and she's like, I'm the queen. You can't do this to me, and I'm going to get out of here, and you're all going to be in trouble. I'm going to tear down this entire church and everything else. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I'm curious.
I don't know how she's going to get out of this. Before we get into our quotes and favorite characters, I would just like to touch upon, we said there are several people MIA in Planetos right now.
Planetos? What's that?
The whole world of Westeros and Essos. Oh. We mentioned Gendry, one of King Robert's bastards that Melisandre was leeching, out there rowing. We don't know where. We mentioned the Brotherhood Without Banners, who we last saw when Arya was with them, and Thoros of Myr, who kept reincarnating Beric Dondarrion.
Yes.
Varys is somewhere out there in the unknown. Benjen Stark, who we assume at this point is long dead, but this was Jon and all the Stark kids' uncle, Ned's brother, who was a ranger who went north of the wall like in season one and just never came back. But that's another one that we just never knew.
Maybe
definitively what the heck happened to him. The Mountain, who we know sort of where he is, but not really what the heck is going on with him. There's definitely many people at large. If we've forgotten some, please write in and let us know. And what do you think? Are they going to be important? I can't imagine that George R. R. Martin has millions of characters in his book. So the TV show really had to compress down to even their secondary and third tier characters. They included for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Also, Asha or Yara, what the heck is her name? Theon's sister. And also Theon's father, Balon Greyjoy, for that matter, who we haven't seen in a while. But anyway, so you have to think that the characters we are being shown in the TV all have to have some purpose and be important. We discussed before that we hadn't seen Lancel in a while, and then he came back with a vengeance that, you know, he wasn't just going to disappear. It's a character that had more to do with the storyline.
Yeah.
These people, I think, will too. It's just, what will their place be?
I wonder.
On to our favorite quotes for the episode. Do you have any, Jason?
I kind of went through a lot of them. Spare me the homilies. I can smell a fraud from a mile away. Olenna.
Oh, nice.
I thought that was great. Who is smarter? I mean, the High Sparrow is so learned.
Yeah, like I say, it's the first time we really saw someone get over on Lady Olenna, who I thought was the smartest person in the Seven Kingdoms. We did mention about Sam's eulogy, but the exact words he said was, he was the blood of the dragon, but now his fire has gone out. He was Aemon Targaryen, and now his watch is ended.
I have one that was good. I mean, not good because it just pissed me off, but when Cersei was talking to her son, I would do anything for you, anything to keep you from harm. I would burn cities to the ground. Bullshit. Go fuck yourself. I hate you.
Well, and probably the worst quote ever from Reek, it can always be worse.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I get what he's saying. He's like, listen, I know that you think you're having it the worst right now. You're getting raped at night and beat. But listen, he cut my dick off. You should have seen
all
what
my
he did
fingers.
To me. Yeah,
yeah, it can get worse. All right, so favorite character?
Mine is going to be a surprise for you.
Okay.
I think. It was Littlefinger.
Wow.
Because every time I think that he has nothing to do with it, we haven't seen or heard from him in a while, he comes back in and you realize everything that's happening is falling into place because of him.
Yeah.
You mentioned a chess game. I think there's a chess game going on, but it's not on the table. I think Littlefinger's holding the chessboard.
Yeah.
And when he wants, he dips the chessboard just a little bit so no one notices, but the pieces now move towards where he's dipping this chessboard. And he's kind of swaying.
Chaos, like he said in the beginning.
But he creates chaos without people knowing he's doing it.
Yeah.
That's the genius of it.
Yeah.
We don't even know what's going on. I'm still confused. Why does he have Sansa up north? Why did he do that?
Why did he kill Joffrey in the first place?
Is he against Cersei? Is he, like, I want to know what's going on in his brain.
Yeah.
And so he's my favorite character. He didn't even have to be there too long for him to be the most memorable character for this episode for me.
I can definitely see that. My favorite character is Ghost, because he saved the day.
Wolf Watch,
and I'll get into that in a second. He is the quietest and the stealthiest of all the six direwolves, which is cool. His appearance is said to resemble the faces on the heart trees in the books, and I like that analogy. And like we said, in both books and TV, he seems to be able to sense danger and comes to the help of his loved ones. And that takes me right into Wolf Watch. Clearly, we have seen Ghost. He is there helping to defend the wall, and I would just like to read a little piece from the book about him. It's talking about Jon, and he's just going north of the wall for a brief mission. So some of the new recruits can say their vows in front of a heart tree, which they have to go north of the wall for that. At the base of the wall, he found Ghost rolling in a snowbank. The big white direwolf seemed to love fresh snow. Dolorous Ed asked, "He's going with you?" John said, "He is. But you will be returning through the black of night. The snowdrifts are waist deep in places. I see you're taking seasoned men with you, but even Benjen, your own uncle, he..." "I have something they did not," John said. John turned his head and whistled, "Ghost, to me." John didn't fear for the direwolf so much as for any wildlings he might encounter. A white wolf in a white wood, silent as a shadow. They will never know he's coming.
Yeah, I like that.
Perfect ghost piece.
I think I've asked you this before, but how many direwolves are left of that clan?
There were six, so if we take out Lady was killed and Grey Wind was killed.
So there's four left?
Four left. Now we know for sure Ghost is alive.
Mm-hmm.
We pretty much know for sure Summer's alive. Last time we saw Bran, he was with him. Nymeria is just at large. We don't really know. Shaggy Dog, we think, was with Rickon last time.
Okay.
So, you know, maybe two for sure, two questionable.
Now, when you bring that up, I'd like to propose something to HBO.
Okay, let's hear it.
Mid-season, so around Christmas, I think HBO should release a 4-episode Game of Thrones special, if they want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just what Bran's going through right now in this timeline that we're watching now with all these characters.
And that was all in the book. I don't know why they cut all that out.
How awesome would that be?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't take away from the story. They have the money. Let's see. Just four. Give me 4 episodes.
The traveling tale of Bran and Company.
Even if it was a half hour. Half hour show.
Bran and Company. Do it, HBO.
I would love it. And then they could... So they wouldn't have to play catch-up next season. They're going to have to play catch-up with Bran next season.
Oh, I agree. They said they left his story where it was in the book.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that means they're cutting out everything that Bran had to do this book because they don't think it was important.
Fuck that.
Well, that concludes our episode 7. Anything else you want to say about this episode, The Gift, Jason?
I enjoyed the episode. I thought it was a pleasant gift for our Sunday, and we're almost at the end. And Clatchers, I know that we haven't had too many CKC podcasts.
Yeah.
We say this, this happened last year, and I thought I was going to be able to pull it off, but the GOT podcasts, they take up a lot of time, and we just haven't had the ability. But we have new people that are going to come when CKC comes back. We have some new people to interview.
Yeah.
We have a Riggs reunion. It's going to be a podcast. It's going to be crazy. I don't know. I'm going to have to edit the shit out of it. It's going to be like 10 people drinking, having fun, partying. We got a lot of things in store. We ask that you guys please keep telling your friends about it. We're gaining listeners. We need more. And of course, remember to check out our Amazon link on our website, coffeeclatchcrew.com. Click on that link, shop on Amazon. We get a little kickback. And we are now on Periscope, which, if you don't know, is made by Twitter, and it's live casting videos. And we will be periscoping some of our podcasts. We will be periscoping that reunion, definitely. And you could find us on Periscope. It's the same as our Twitter tag, CKC Podcast.
Yeah, and also make sure you write in about our questions, your favorite character, Wolf Watch, to contact at coffeeclutchcrew.com.
Until then, this round's on me.
We'll see you for episode 8, Hard Home.
Brothers, oh brothers, my days here are done. The Dornishman's taken my life. But what does it matter? For all men must die. And I've tasted the Dornishman's wife. I've tasted the Dornishman's wife.
Please hang up and try again.